1. Agile, continuous delivery, and the three ways. In this chapter, an introduction to the underpinning theory of lean manufacturing is presented, as well as the three ways, the principles from which all of the observed DevOps behaviors can be derived. Our focus here is primarily on theory and principles, describing many decades of lessons learned from manufacturing, high reliability organizations, high trust management models, and others, from which DevOps practices have been derived. The resulting concrete principles and patterns, and their practical application to the technology value stream, are presented in the remaining chapters of the book. The manufacturing value stream. One of the fundamental concepts in Lean is the value stream. We will define it first in the context of manufacturing, and then extrapolate how it applies to DevOps and the technology value stream. Karen Martin and Mike Osterling define value stream in their book, Value Stream Mapping: How to Visualize Work and Align Leadership for Organizational Transformation, as the sequence of activities an organization undertakes to deliver upon a customer request, or the sequence of activities required to design, produce, and deliver a good or service to a customer, including the dual flows of information and material. In manufacturing operations, the value stream is often easy to see and observe. It starts when a customer order is received and the raw materials are released onto the plant floor. To enable fast and predictable lead times in any value stream, there is usually a relentless focus on creating a smooth and even flow of work, using techniques such as small batch sizes, reducing work in process, WIP, preventing rework to ensure we don't pass defects to downstream work centers, and constantly optimizing our system toward our global goals. The technology value stream. The same principles and patterns that enable the fast flow of work in physical processes are equally applicable to technology work, and for that matter, for all knowledge work. In DevOps, we typically define our technology value stream as the process required to convert a business hypothesis into a technology-enabled service that delivers value to the customer. The input to our process is the formulation of a business objective, concept, idea, or hypothesis, and starts when we accept the work in development, adding it to our committed backlog of work. From there, development teams that follow a typical agile or iterative process will likely transform that idea into user stories and some sort of feature specification, which is then implemented in code into the application or service being built. The code is then checked into the version control repository, where each change is integrated and tested with the rest of the software system. Because value is created only when our services are running in production, we must ensure that we are not only delivering fast flow, but that our deployments can also be performed without causing chaos and disruptions, such as service outages, service impairments, or security or compliance failures. Focus on deployment lead time. For the remainder of this book, our attention will be on deployment lead time, a subset of the value stream described above. This value stream begins when any engineer in our value stream, which includes development, QA, IT operations, and InfoSec, checks a change into version control and ends when that change is successfully running in production, providing value to the customer and generating useful feedback and telemetry. The first phase of work that includes design and development is akin to lean product development and is highly variable and highly uncertain, often requiring high degrees of creativity and work that may never be performed again, resulting in high variability of process times. In contrast, the second phase of work, which includes testing and operations, is akin to lean manufacturing. It requires creativity and expertise and strives to be predictable and mechanistic, with the goal of achieving work outputs with minimized variability. For example, short and predictable lead times, near zero defects, Instead of large batches of work being processed sequentially through the design development value stream, and then through the test operations value stream, such as when we have a large batch waterfall process or long-lived feature branches, our goal is to have testing and operations happening simultaneously with design development, enabling fast flow and high quality. This method succeeds when we work in small batches and build quality into every part of our value stream. Defining lead time versus processing time. In the lean community, lead time is one of two measures commonly used to measure performance in value streams, with the other being processing time, sometimes known as touch time or task time. Whereas the lead time clock starts when the request is made and ends when it is fulfilled, the process time clock starts only when we begin work on the customer request. Specifically, it omits the time that the work is in queue, waiting to be processed. Because lead time is what the customer experiences, we typically focus our process improvement attention there instead of on process time. However, the proportion of process time to lead time serves as an important measure of efficiency. Achieving fast flow and short lead times almost always requires reducing the time our work is waiting in queues. The common scenario: deployment lead times requiring months. In business as usual, we often find ourselves in situations where our deployment lead times require months. This is especially common in large, complex organizations that are working with tightly coupled, monolithic applications, often with scarce integration test environments, long test and production environment lead times, high reliance on manual testing, and multiple required approval processes. When this occurs, our value stream may look like Figure 1 in the additional materials PDF. When we have long deployment lead times, heroics are required at almost every stage of the value stream. We may discover that nothing works at the end of the project when we merge all the development team's changes together, resulting in code that no longer builds correctly or passes any of our tests. Fixing each problem requires days or weeks of investigation to determine who broke the code and how it can be fixed, and still results in poor customer outcomes. Our DevOps ideal: deployment lead times of minutes. In the DevOps ideal, developers receive fast, constant feedback on their work, which enables them to quickly and independently implement, integrate, and validate their code, and have the code deployed into the production environment, either by deploying the code themselves or by others. We achieve this by continually checking small code changes into our version control repository, performing automated and exploratory testing against it, and deploying it into production. This enables us to have a high degree of confidence that our changes will operate as designed in production, and that any problems can be quickly detected and corrected. This is most easily achieved when we have architecture that is modular, well-encapsulated, and loosely coupled, so that small teams are able to work with high degrees of autonomy, with failures being small and contained, and without causing global disruptions. In this scenario, our deployment lead time is measured in minutes, or in the worst case, hours. Our resulting value stream map should look something like Figure 2 in the additional materials PDF. Observing percent CA as a measure of rework. In addition to lead times and process times, the third key metric in the technology value stream is percent complete and accurate, percent CA. This metric reflects the quality of the output of each step in our value stream. Karen Martin and Mike Osterling state that the percent CA can be obtained by asking downstream customers what percentage of the time they receive work that is usable as is, meaning that they can do their work without having to correct the information that was provided, add missing information that should have been supplied, or clarify information that should have and could have been clearer. The three ways. The principles underpinning DevOps. The Phoenix Project presents the three ways as the set of underpinning principles from which all the observed DevOps behaviors and patterns are derived. The first way enables fast left-to-right flow of work from development to operations to the customer. In order to maximize flow, we need to make work visible, reduce our batch sizes and intervals of work, build in quality by preventing defects from being passed to downstream work centers, and constantly optimize for the global goals. By speeding up flow through the technology value stream, we reduce the lead time required to fulfill internal or customer requests, especially the time required to deploy code into the production environment. By doing this, we increase the quality of work as well as our throughput, and boost our ability to out-experiment the competition. The resulting practices include continuous build, integration, test, and deployment processes, creating environments on demand, limiting work in process, WIP, and building systems and organizations that are safe to change. The second way enables the fast and constant flow of feedback from right to left at all stages of our value stream. It requires that we amplify feedback to prevent problems from happening again, or enable faster detection and recovery. By doing this, we create quality at the source and generate or embed knowledge where it is needed. This allows us to create ever safer systems of work where problems are found and fixed long before a catastrophic failure occurs. By seeing problems as they occur and swarming them until effective countermeasures are in place, we continually shorten and amplify our feedback loops, a core tenet of virtually all modern process improvement methodologies. This maximizes the opportunities for our organization to learn and improve. The third way enables the creation of a generative, high-trust culture that supports a dynamic, disciplined, and scientific approach to experimentation and risk-taking, facilitating the creation of organizational learning both from our successes and failures. Furthermore, by continually shortening and amplifying our feedback loops, we create ever safer systems of work and are better able to take risks and perform experiments that help us learn faster than our competition and win in the marketplace. As part of the third way, we also design our system of work so that we can multiply the effects of new knowledge, transforming local discoveries into global improvements. Regardless of where someone performs work, they do so with the cumulative and collective experience of everyone in the organization. Conclusion. In this chapter, we described the concepts of value streams, lead time as one of the key measures of the effectiveness for both manufacturing and technology value streams, and the high-level concepts behind each of the three ways, the principles that underpin DevOps. In the following chapters, the principles for each of the three ways are described in greater detail. The first of these principles is flow, which is focused on how we create the fast flow of work in any value stream, whether it's in manufacturing or technology work. The practices that enable fast flow are described in Part 3. 2. The first way, the principles of flow. In the technology value stream, work typically flows from development to operations, the functional areas between our business and our customers. The first way requires the fast and smooth flow of work from development to operations to deliver value to customers quickly. We optimize for this global goal instead of local goals, such as development feature completion rates, test find fix ratios, or ops availability measures. We increase flow by making work visible, by reducing batch sizes and intervals of work, and by building quality in, preventing defects from being passed to downstream work centers. By speeding up the flow through the technology value stream, we reduce the lead time required to fulfill internal and external customer requests, further increasing the quality of our work while making us more agile and able to out-experiment the competition. Our goal is to decrease the amount of time required for changes to be deployed into production, and to increase the reliability and quality of those services. Clues on how we do this in the technology value stream can be gleaned from how the lean principles were applied to the manufacturing value stream. Make our work visible. A significant difference between technology and manufacturing value streams is that our work is invisible. Unlike physical processes, in the technology value stream, we cannot easily see where flow is being impeded or when work is piling up in front of constrained work centers. Transferring work between work centers is usually highly visible and slow because inventory must be physically moved. However, in technology work, the move can be done with a click of a button, such as by reassigning a work ticket to another team. Because it is so easy, work can bounce between teams endlessly due to incomplete information. Or work can be passed onto downstream work centers with problems that remain completely invisible until we are late delivering what we promised to the customer, or our application fails in the production environment. To help us see where work is flowing well and where work is queued or stalled, we need to make our work as visible as possible. One of the best methods of doing this is using visual work boards, such as Kanban boards or sprint planning boards, where we can represent work on physical or electronic cards. Work originates on the left, often being pulled from a backlog, is pulled from work center, represented in columns, and finishes when it reaches the right side of the board, usually in a column labeled done or in production. Not only does our work become visible, we can also manage our work so that it flows from left to right as quickly as possible. Furthermore, we can measure lead time from when a card is placed on the board to when it is moved into the done column. Ideally, our Kanban board will span the entire value stream, defining work as completed only when it reaches the right side of the board, as seen in Figure 3 in the additional materials PDF. Work is not done when development completes the implementation of a feature. Rather, it is only done when our application is running successfully in production, delivering value to the customer. By putting all work for each work center in queues and making it visible, all stakeholders can more easily prioritize work in the context of global goals. Doing this enables each work center to single task on the highest priority work until it is completed, increasing throughput. Limit work in process, WIP. In manufacturing, daily work is typically dictated by a production schedule that is generated regularly, for example, daily, weekly, establishing which jobs must be run based on customer orders, order due dates, parts available, and so forth. In technology, our work is usually far more dynamic. This is especially the case in shared services, where teams must satisfy the demands of many different stakeholders. As a result, daily work becomes dominated by the priority du jour, often with requests for urgent work coming in through every communication mechanism possible, including ticketing systems, outage calls, emails, phone calls, chat rooms, and management escalations. Disruptions in manufacturing are also highly visible and costly, often requiring breaking the current job and scrapping any incomplete work in process to start the new job. This high level of effort discourages frequent disruptions. However, interrupting technology workers is easy because the consequences are invisible to almost everyone, even though the negative impact to productivity may be far greater than in manufacturing. For instance, an engineer assigned to multiple projects must switch between tasks, incurring all the costs of having to reestablish context, as well as cognitive rules and goals. Studies have shown that the time to complete even simple tasks, such as sorting geometric shapes, significantly degrades when multitasking. Of course, because our work in the technology value stream is far more cognitively complex than sorting geometric shapes, the effects of multitasking on process time is much worse. We can limit multitasking when we use a Kanban board to manage our work, such as by codifying and enforcing WIP, work in progress, limits for each column or work center that puts an upper limit on the number of cards that can be in a column. For example, we may set a WIP limit of 3 cards for testing. When there are already 3 cards in the test lane, no new cards can be added to the lane unless a card is completed or removed from the in-work column and put back into queue, that is, putting the card back to the column to the left. Nothing can be worked on until it is represented first in a work card, reinforcing that all work must be made visible. Dominica de Grandis, one of the leading experts on using Kanbans and DevOps value streams, notes that controlling queue size, WIP, is an extremely powerful management tool, as it is one of the few leading indicators of lead time. With most work items, we don't know how long it will take until it's actually completed. Limiting WIP also makes it easier to see problems that prevent the completion of work. For instance, when we limit WIP, we find that we may have nothing to do because we are waiting on someone else. Although it may be tempting to start new work, that is, it's better to be doing something than nothing, a far better action would be to find out what is causing the delay and help fix that problem. Bad multitasking often occurs when people are assigned to multiple projects, resulting in many prioritization problems. In other words, as David J. Anderson, author of Kanban, Successful Evolutionary Change for Your Technology Business, quipped, "Stop starting, start finishing." Reduce batch sizes. Another key component to creating smooth and fast flow is performing work in small batch sizes. Prior to the lean manufacturing revolution, it was common practice to manufacture in large batch sizes, or lot sizes, especially for operations where job setup or switching between jobs was time-consuming or costly. For example, producing large car body panels requires setting large and heavy dies onto metal stamping machines, a process that could take days. When changeover cost is so expensive, we would often stamp as many panels at a time as possible, creating large batches in order to reduce the number of changeovers. However, large batch sizes result in skyrocketing levels of WIP and high levels of variability in flow that cascade through the entire manufacturing plant. The result is long lead times and poor quality. If a problem is found in one body panel, the entire batch has to be scrapped. One of the key lessons in Lean is that in order to shrink lead times and increase quality, we must strive to continually shrink batch sizes. The theoretical lower limit for batch sizes, single-piece flow, where each operation is performed one unit at a time. The dramatic differences between large and small batch sizes can be seen in the simple newsletter mailing simulation described in Lean Thinking, Banish Waste and Create Wealth in Your Corporation by James P. Womack and Daniel T. Jones. Suppose, in our own example, we have 10 brochures to send, and mailing each brochure requires 4 steps. Fold the paper, insert the paper into the envelope, seal the envelope, and stamp the envelope. The large batch strategy, that is, mass production, would be to sequentially perform one operation on each of the 10 brochures. In other words, we would first fold all 10 sheets of paper, then insert each of them into envelopes, then seal all 10 envelopes, and then stamp them. On the other hand, in the small batch strategy, that is, single-piece flow, all the steps required to complete each brochure are performed sequentially before starting on the next brochure. In other words, we fold one sheet of paper, insert it into the envelope, seal it, and stamp it, Only then do we start the process over with the next sheet of paper. The difference between using large and small batch sizes is dramatic. Suppose each of the four operations takes 10 seconds for each of the 10 envelopes. With the large batch size strategy, the first completed and stamped envelope is produced only after 310 seconds. Worse, suppose we discover during the envelope sealing operation that we made an error in the first step of folding. In this case, the earliest we would discover the error is at 200 seconds, and we have to refold and reinsert all 10 brochures in our batch again. In contrast, in the small batch strategy, the first completed stamped envelope is produced in only 40 seconds, 8 times faster than the large batch strategy. And if we made an error in the first step, we only have to redo the one brochure in our batch. Small batch sizes result in less WIP, faster lead times, faster detection of errors, and less rework. The negative outcomes associated with large batch sizes are just as relevant to the technology value stream as in manufacturing. Consider when we have an annual schedule for software releases, where an entire year's worth of code that development has worked on is released to production deployment. Like in manufacturing, this large batch release creates sudden, high levels of WIP and massive disruptions to all downstream work centers, resulting in poor flow and poor quality outcomes. This validates our common experience that the larger the change going into production, the more difficult the production errors are to diagnose and fix, and the longer they take to remediate. In a post on Startup Lessons Learned, Eric Ries states, "The batch size is the unit at which work products move between stages in a development or DevOps process. For software, the easiest batch to see is code. Every time an engineer checks in code, they are batching up a certain amount of work. There are many techniques for controlling these batches, ranging from the tiny batches needed for continuous deployment to more traditional branch-based development, where all of the code from multiple developers working for weeks or months is batched up and integrated together." The equivalent to single-piece flow in the technology value stream is realized with continuous deployment, where each change committed to version control is integrated, tested, and deployed into production. The practices that enable this are described in Part 4. Reduce the number of handoffs. In the technology value stream, whenever we have long deployment lead times measured in months, it is often because there are hundreds or even thousands of operations required to move our code from version control into the production environment. To transmit code through the value stream requires multiple departments to work on a variety of tasks, including functional testing, integration testing, environment creation, server administration, storage administration, networking, load balancing, and information security. Each time the work passes from team to team, we require all sorts of communication: requesting, specifying, signaling, coordinating, and often prioritizing, scheduling, deconflicting, testing, and verifying. This may require using different ticketing or project management systems, writing technical specification documents, communicating via meetings, emails, or phone calls, and using file system shares, FTP servers, and wiki pages. Each of these steps is a potential queue where work will wait when we rely on resources that are shared between different value streams, for example, centralized operations. The lead times for these requests are often so long that there is constant escalation to have work performed within the needed timelines. Even under the best circumstances, some knowledge is inevitably lost with each handoff. With enough handoffs, the work can completely lose the context of the problem being solved, or the organizational goal being supported. For instance, a server administrator may see a newly created ticket requesting that user accounts be created. Without knowing what application or service it's for, why it needs to be created, what all the dependencies are, or whether it's actually recurring work. To mitigate these types of problems, we strive to reduce the number of handoffs, either by automating significant portions of the work or by reorganizing teams so they can deliver value to the customer themselves instead of having to be constantly dependent on others. As a result, we increase flow by reducing the amount of time that our work spends waiting in queue, as well as the amount of non-value-added time. See Appendix 4. Continually identify and elevate our constraints. To reduce lead times and increase throughput, we need to continually identify our system's constraints and improve its work capacity. In Beyond the Goal, Dr. Goldratt states, "In any value stream, there is always a direction of flow, and there is always one and only constraint. Any improvement not made at that constraint is an illusion." If we improve a work center that is positioned before the constraint, work will merely pile up at the bottleneck even faster, waiting for work to be performed by the bottlenecked work center. On the other hand, if we improve a work center positioned after the bottleneck, it remains starved, waiting for work to clear the bottleneck. As a solution, Dr. Goldratt defined the 5 focusing steps. Identify the system's constraint. Decide how to exploit the system's constraint. Subordinate everything else to the above decisions. Elevate the system's constraint. If in the previous steps a constraint has been broken, go back to step 1, but do not allow inertia to cause a system constraint. In typical DevOps transformations, as we progress from deployment lead times measured in months or quarters to lead times measured in minutes, the constraint usually follows this progression. Environment creation. We cannot achieve deployments on demand if we always have to wait weeks or months for production or test environments. The countermeasure is to create environments that are on demand and completely self-serviced, so that they are always available when we need them. Code deployment. We cannot achieve deployments on demand if each of our production code deployments take weeks or months to perform. That is, each deployment requires 1,300 manual, error-prone steps involving up to 300 engineers. The countermeasure is to automate our deployments as much as possible, with the goal of being completely automated so they can be done self-service by any developer. Test, setup, and run. We cannot achieve deployments on demand if every code deployment requires 2 weeks to set up our test environments and datasets, and another 4 weeks to manually execute all our regression tests. The countermeasure is to automate our tests so we can execute deployments safely, and to parallelize them so the test rate can keep up with our code development rate. Overly tight architecture. We cannot achieve deployments on demand if overly tight architecture means that every time we want to make a code change, we have to send our engineers to scores of committee meetings in order to get permission to make our changes. Our countermeasure is to create more loosely coupled architecture so that changes can be made safely and with more autonomy, increasing developer productivity. After all these constraints have been broken, our constraint will likely be development or the product owners. Because our goal is to enable small teams of developers to independently develop, test, and deploy value to customers quickly and reliably, this is where we want our constraint to be. High performers, regardless of whether an engineer is in development, QA, ops, or InfoSec, state that their goal is to help maximize developer productivity. When the constraint is here, we are limited only by the number of good business hypotheses we create and our ability to develop the code necessary to test these hypotheses with real customers. The progression of constraints listed above are generalizations of typical transformations. Techniques to identify the constraint in actual value streams, such as through value stream mapping and measurements, are described later in this book. Eliminate hardships and waste in the value stream. Shigeo Shingo, one of the pioneers of the Toyota production system, believed that waste constituted the largest threat to business viability. The commonly used definition in Lean is the use of any material or resource beyond what the customer requires and is willing to pay for. He defined 7 major types of manufacturing waste: inventory, overproduction, extra processing, transportation, waiting, motion, and defects. More modern interpretations of Lean have noted that eliminating waste can have a demeaning and dehumanizing context. Instead, the goal is reframed to reduce hardship and drudgery in our daily work through continual learning in order to achieve the organization's goals. For the remainder of this book, the term waste will imply this more modern definition, as it more closely matches the DevOps ideals and desired outcomes. In the book, Implementing Lean Software Development, From Concept to Cash, Mary and Tom Papendieck describe waste and hardship in the software development stream as anything that causes delay for the customer, such as activities that can be bypassed without affecting the result. The following categories of waste and hardship come from Implementing Lean Software Development, unless otherwise noted. Partially done work. This includes any work in the value stream that has not been completed. For example, requirement documents or change orders not yet reviewed, and work that is sitting in queue. For example, waiting for QA review or server admin ticket. Partially done work becomes obsolete and loses value as time progresses. Extra processes. Any additional work that is being performed in a process that does not add value to the customer. This may include documentation not used in a downstream work center, or reviews or approvals that do not add value to the output. Extra processes add effort and increase lead times. Extra features. Features built into the service that are not needed by the organization or the customer. For example, gold plating. Extra features add complexity and effort to testing and managing functionality. Task switching. When people are assigned to multiple projects and value streams, requiring them to context switch and manage dependencies between work, adding additional effort and time into the value stream. Waiting. Any delays between work requiring resources to wait until they can complete the current work. Delays increase cycle time and prevent the customer from getting value. Motion. The amount of effort to move information or materials from one work center to another. Motion waste can be created when people who need to communicate frequently are not co-located. Handoffs also create motion waste and often require additional communication to resolve ambiguities. Defects. Incorrect, missing, or unclear information, materials, or products create waste, as effort is needed to resolve these issues. The longer the time between defect creation and defect detection, the more difficult it is to resolve the defect. Non-standard or manual work. Reliance on non-standard or manual work from others, such as using non-rebuilding servers, test environments, and configurations. Ideally, any dependencies on operations should be automated, self-serviced, and available on demand. Heroics. In order for an organization to achieve goals, individuals and teams are put in a position where they must perform unreasonable acts, which may even become a part of their daily work. For example, nightly 2 a.m. problems in production, creating hundreds of work tickets as part of every software release. Our goal is to make these wastes and hardships, anywhere heroics become necessary, visible, and to systematically do what is needed to alleviate or eliminate these burdens and hardships to achieve our goal of fast flow. Conclusion. Improving flow through the technology value stream is essential to achieving DevOps outcomes. We do this by making work visible, limiting WIP, reducing batch sizes and the number of handoffs, continually identifying and evaluating our constraints, and eliminating hardships in our daily work. The specific practices that enable fast flow in the DevOps value stream are presented in Part 4. In the next chapter, we present the second way, the principles of feedback. 3. The second way, the principles of feedback. While the first way describes the principles that enable the fast flow of work from left to right, the second way describes the principles that enable the reciprocal, fast, and constant feedback from right to left at all stages of the value stream. Our goal is to create an even safer and more resilient system of work. This is especially important when working in complex systems, when the earliest opportunity to detect and correct errors is typically when a catastrophic event is underway, such as a manufacturing worker being hurt on the job or a nuclear reactor meltdown in progress. In technology, our work happens almost entirely within complex systems with a high risk of catastrophic consequences. As in manufacturing, we often discover problems only when large failures are underway, such as a massive production outage or a security breach resulting in the theft of customer data. We make our system of work safer by creating fast, frequent, high-quality information flow throughout our value stream and our organization, which includes feedback and feed-forward loops. This allows us to detect and remediate problems while they are smaller, cheaper, and easier to fix, avert problems before they cause catastrophe, and create organizational learning that we integrate into future work. When failures and accidents occur, we treat them as opportunities for learning, as opposed to a cause for punishment and blame. To achieve all of the above, let us first explore the nature of complex systems and how they can be made safer. Working safely within complex systems. One of the defining characteristics of a complex system is that it defies any single person's ability to see the system as a whole and understand how all the pieces fit together. Complex systems typically have a high degree of interconnectedness of tightly coupled components, and system-level behavior cannot be explained merely in terms of the behavior of the system components. Dr. Charles Perrow studied the Three Mile Island crisis and observed that it was impossible for anyone to understand how the reactor would behave in all circumstances and how it might fail. When a problem was underway in one component, it was difficult to isolate from the other components, quickly flowing through the paths of least resistance in unpredictable ways. Dr. Sidney Decker, who also codified some of the key elements of safety culture, observed another characteristic of complex systems. Doing the same thing twice will not predictably or necessarily lead to the same result. It is this characteristic that makes static checklists and best practices, while valuable, insufficient to prevent catastrophes from occurring. See Appendix 5. Therefore, because failure is inherent and inevitable in complex systems, we must design a safe system of work, whether in manufacturing or technology, where we can perform work without fear, confident that any errors will be detected quickly, long before they cause catastrophic outcomes, such as worker injury, product defects, or negative customer impact. After he decoded the causal mechanism behind the Toyota product system as part of his doctoral thesis at Harvard Business School, Dr. Steven Spear stated that designing perfectly safe systems is likely beyond our abilities, but we can make it safer to work in complex systems when the four following conditions are met. Complex work is managed so that problems in design and operations are revealed. Problems are swarmed and solved, resulting in quick construction of new knowledge. New local knowledge is exploited globally throughout the organization. Leaders create other leaders who continually grow these types of capabilities. Each of these capabilities are required to work safely in a complex system. In the next sections, the first two capabilities and their importance are described, as well as how they have been created in other domains, and what practices enable them in the technology value stream. The third and fourth capabilities are described in Chapter 4. See problems as they occur. In a safe system of work, we must constantly test our design and operating assumptions. Our goal is to increase information flow in our system from as many areas as possible, sooner, faster, cheaper, and with as much clarity between cause and effect as possible. The more assumptions we can invalidate, the faster we can find and fix problems, increasing our resilience, agility, and ability to learn and innovate. We do this by creating feedback and feed-forward loops into our system of work. Dr. Peter Senge, in his book, The Fifth Discipline, The Art and Practice of the Learning Organization, described feedback loops as a critical part of learning organizations and systems thinking. Feedback and feed-forward loops cause components within a system to reinforce or counteract each other. In manufacturing, the absence of effective feedback often contribute to major quality and safety problems. In one well-documented case at the General Motors Fremont manufacturing plant, there were no effective procedures in place to detect problems during the assembly process, nor were there explicit procedures on what to do when problems were found. As a result, there were instances of engines being put in backward, cars missing steering wheels or tires, and cars even having to be towed off the assembly line because they wouldn't start. In contrast, in high-performing manufacturing operations, there is fast, frequent, and high-quality information flow throughout the entire value stream. Every work operation is measured and monitored, and any defects or significant deviations are quickly found and acted upon. These are the foundation of what enables quality, safety, and continual learning and improvement. In the technology value stream, we often get poor outcomes because of the absence of fast feedback. For instance, in a waterfall software project, we may develop code for an entire year and get no feedback on quality until we begin the testing phase, or worse, when we release our software to customers. When feedback is this delayed and infrequent, it is too slow to enable us to prevent undesirable outcomes. In contrast, our goal is to create fast feedback and fast-forward loops wherever work is performed, at all stages of the technology value stream, encompassing product management, development, QA, InfoSec, and operations. This includes the creation of automated build, integration, and test processes so that we can immediately detect when a change has been introduced that takes us out of a correctly functioning and deployable state. We also create pervasive telemetry so we can see how all our system components are operating in the production environment, so that we can quickly detect when they're not operating as expected. Telemetry also allows us to measure whether we are achieving our intended goals and, ideally, is radiated to the entire value stream so we can see how our actions affect other portions of the system as a whole. Feedback loops not only enable quick detection and recovery of problems, but they also inform us on how to prevent these problems from occurring again in the future. Doing this increases the quality and safety of our system of work and creates organizational learning. As Elizabeth Hendrickson, VP of Engineering at Pivotal Software, Inc., and author of Explore It, Reduce Risk and Increase Confidence with Exploratory Testing, said, "When I headed up quality engineering, I described my job as creating feedback cycles. Feedback is critical because it is what allows us to steer. We must constantly validate between customer needs, our intentions, and our implementations. Testing is merely one sort of feedback." Swarm and solve problems to build new knowledge. Obviously, it is not sufficient to merely detect when the unexpected occurs. When problems occur, we must swarm them, mobilizing whoever is required to solve the problem. According to Dr. Speer, the goal of swarming is to contain problems before they have a chance to spread, and to diagnose and treat the problem so that it cannot recur. In doing so, he says, they build ever deeper knowledge about how to manage the systems for doing our work, converting inevitable upfront ignorance into knowledge. The paragon of this principle is the Toyota Andon cord. In a Toyota manufacturing plant, above every work center is a cord that every worker and manager is trained to pull when something goes wrong. For example, when a part is defective, when a required part is not available, or even when work takes longer than documented. When the Andon cord is pulled, the team leader is alerted and immediately works to resolve the problem. If the problem cannot be resolved within a specified time, for example, 55 seconds, the production line is halted so that the entire organization can be mobilized to assist with problem resolution until a successful countermeasure has been developed. Instead of working around the problem or scheduling a fix when we have more time, we swarm to fix it immediately. This is nearly the opposite of the behavior at the GM Fremont plant described earlier. Swarming is necessary for the following reasons. It prevents the problem from progressing downstream, where the cost and effort to repair it increases exponentially, and technical debt is allowed to accumulate. It prevents the work center from starting new work, which will likely introduce new errors into the system. If the problem is not addressed, the work center could potentially have the same problem in the next operation, for example, 55 seconds later, requiring more fixes and work. See Appendix 6. This practice of swarming seems contrary to common management practice, as we are deliberately allowing a local problem to disrupt operations globally. However, swarming enables learning. It prevents the loss of critical information due to fading memories or changing circumstances. This is especially critical in complex systems, where many problems occur because of some unexpected, idiosyncratic interaction of people, processes, products, places, and circumstances. As time passes, it becomes impossible to reconstruct exactly what was going on when the problem occurred. As Dr. Speer notes, swarming is part of the disciplined cycle of real-time problem recognition, diagnosis, and treatment, countermeasures or corrective measures in manufacturing vernacular. It is the discipline of the Schuert cycle, plan, do, check, act, popularized by W. Edwards Deming, but accelerated to warp speed. It is only through the swarming of ever smaller problems discovered ever earlier in the life cycle that we can deflect problems before a catastrophe occurs. In other words, when the nuclear reactor melts down, it is already too late to avert worst outcomes. To enable fast feedback in the technology value stream, we must create the equivalent of an Andon cord and the related swarming response. This requires that we also create the culture that makes it safe, and even encouraged, to pull the Andon cord when something goes wrong, whether it is when a production incident occurs or when errors occur earlier in the value stream, such as when someone introduces a change that breaks our continuous build or test processes. When conditions trigger an Andon cord pull, we swarm to solve the problem and prevent the introduction of new work until the issue has been resolved. This provides fast feedback for everyone in the value stream, especially the person who caused the system to fail, enables us to quickly isolate and diagnose the problem, and prevents further complicating factors that can obscure cause and effect. Preventing the introduction of new work enables continuous integration and deployment, which is single-piece flow in the technology value stream. All changes that pass our continuous build and integration tests are deployed into production, and any changes that cause any tests to fail trigger our Andon cord and are swarmed and resolved. Keep pushing quality closer to the source. We may inadvertently perpetuate unsafe systems of work due to the way we respond to accidents and incidents. In complex systems, adding more inspection steps and approval processes actually increases the likelihood of future failures. The effectiveness of approval processes decreases as we push decision-making further away from where the work is performed. Doing so not only lowers the quality of decisions, but also increases our cycle time, thus decreasing the strength of the feedback between cause and effect, and reducing our ability to learn from successes and failures. This can be seen even in smaller and less complex systems. When top-down bureaucratic command and control systems become ineffective, it is usually because the variance between who should do something and who is actually doing something is too large due to insufficient clarity and timeliness. Examples of ineffective quality controls include requiring another team to complete tedious, error-prone, and manual tasks that could be easily automated and run as needed by the team who needs the work performed. Requiring approvals from busy people who are distant from the work, forcing them to make decisions without any adequate knowledge of the work or the potential implications, or to merely rubber stamp their approvals. Creating large volumes of documentation of questionable detail which become obsolete shortly after they are written. Pushing large batches of work to teams and special committees for approval and processing, and then waiting for responses. Instead, we need everyone in our value stream to find and fix problems in their area of control as part of our daily work. By doing this, we push quality and safety responsibilities and decision-making to where the work is performed, instead of relying on approvals from distant executives. We use peer reviews of our proposed changes to gain whatever assurance is needed that our changes will operate as designed. We automate as much of the quality checking typically performed by a QA or information security department as possible. Instead of developers needing to request or schedule a test to be run, these tests can be performed on demand, enabling developers to quickly test their own code and even deploy those changes into production themselves. By doing this, we truly make quality everyone's responsibility, as opposed to it being the sole responsibility of a separate department. Information security is not just information security's job, just as availability isn't merely the job of operations. Having developers share responsibility for the quality of the systems they build not only improves outcomes, but also accelerates learning. This is especially important for developers, as they are typically the team that is furthest removed from the customer. As Gary Groover observes, it's impossible for a developer to learn anything when someone yells at them for something they broke 6 months ago. That's why we need to provide feedback to everyone as quickly as possible, in minutes, not months. Enable optimizing for downstream work centers. In the 1980s, designing for manufacturability principles sought to design parts and processes so that finished goods could be created with the lowest cost, highest quality, and fastest flow. Examples include designing parts that are wildly asymmetrical to prevent them from being put on backwards, and designing screw fasteners so that they are impossible to over-tighten. This was a departure from how design was typically done, which focused on the external customers, but overlooked internal stakeholders, such as the people performing the manufacturing. Lean defines two types of customers that we must design for. The external customer, who most likely pays for the service we are delivering, and the internal customer, who receives and processes the work immediately after us. According to Lean, our most important customer is our next step downstream. Optimizing our work for them requires that we have empathy for their problems in order to better identify the design problems that prevent fast and smooth flow. In the technology value stream, we optimize for downstream work centers by designing for operations, where operational non-functional requirements, for example, architecture, performance, stability, testability, configurability, and security, are prioritized as highly as user features. By doing this, we create quality at the source, likely resulting in a set of codified non-functional requirements that we can proactively integrate into every service we build. Conclusion. Creating fast feedback is critical to achieving quality, reliability, and safety in the technology value stream. We do this by seeing problems as they occur, swarming and solving problems to build new knowledge, pushing quality closer to the source, and continually optimizing for downstream work centers. The specific practices that enable fast flow in the DevOps value stream are presented in Part 4. In the next chapter, we present the third way, the principles of feedback.